Hey everyone, before we start, I wanted to let you know, if you would like to watch our whole service, head to our website, that's dc2.me, and from the media drop-down, click sermons. You can watch our whole service there. And now, here's this week's sermon.
Well, good morning and happy new year to you. My name's Zach, I'm one of the pastors here, and would love to jump right into our teaching today. Today's anchored in John chapter 1, starting in verse 9. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him, but to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood, or of the will, or of the flesh, or of the will of a man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. We have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. I hope you had a fantastic Christmas. What'd you get? The couple things in our house this year. It's so fun being a parent, and as your kids get older, they just get cooler all the time. So this year, gifts were given at a level that I'm like, respect. Like, I really, you got game, you guys. My son Deacon, in a very Deacon way, gave a mug to my wife Ashley, which, you know, you don't got game if you're just giving a mug. It's got to be a good mug. This mug is classic white porcelain, nothing fancy about the design. What made it next level was what was written on it, which just said, "Mom, no matter how hard life gets, at least you'll never have ugly children." And it was just very Deacon. My son Brogan, for me, leveled up this year and got me a book. And it's one thing to get a book. It's another thing to get a deeply meaningful book. A particular book he got me was called The Broncos Suck. And on every page, it just repeats that line over and over and over and over for an entire book. It was just ingenious. I love it. Also, I hope you weren't offended by the fact that I just said that from the stage. What'd you get? What'd you do? For many, Christmas time involves some sort of transportation, trains, planes, and automobiles. In my family, our Christmas, we've got folks spread out all over the place, but we're all in the Denver metro area. So Christmas for us really just looks like slowly driving around different parts of the city for like two weeks. And it's amazing. I love it. But because most of our extended family lives close by, we're just driving. For a lot of you, just hearing from you even today, a couple weeks before Christmas, we're going all over the globe for different things. It does keep us hopping. And each Christmas features a particular rhythm as we celebrate an individual Christmas with my family, my dad's extended family, my mom's extended family, with Ashley's grandma. Often it feels like, for me, things get going pretty fast, and that my journal spends most of its time in my backpack rather than out of it, which is a sign for me that I'm not engaging with life as much as I'm sprinting through it. And this transportation thing at the holidays, I do think it's interesting to look at. It's weird in our culture because it's not unusual in many cultures, especially the further back in time that you go and the further away from fast transit that you go, that parties were not just one day or just a couple hour affair. They would last days. Why? Because it just took so much dang time and preparation to get to the party. A first century Jewish wedding would be a 7-day party on average. There's records of some of these lasting for months. And for some of us, you just had a pretty crazy hot flash thinking about spending that much time with your family in a row. And we do have flashes of this in our culture today. There's music festivals and conventions. The Olympics are a great example of this. Some parades that tend to go. The college football playoffs, playoffuary, I think has an argument to be made in here. But some of you have actually been to a party like this, and you know exactly what happens. It's just so long that you end up sitting. And you end up sitting for so long that you end up having a conversation. And I think a lot of cultures and a lot of occasions do a fantastic job of having a moment in these ceremonies to remind us why we're still there. Why are we still focused on this? What would it be like to consider Christmas time like this? that it's not just December 25th, but that it's actually several days of observing and deeply engaging with a holiday. Ashley Wallace is a prolific writer, and she spoke to the need for observing Christmas in this kind of a way in her Advent book, Celebrating Advent at Home. She says this, "In the world in which we live, we're given no time to prepare for the birth of our Lord and Savior, and then no time to celebrate it once we get there. And perhaps the most exciting thing on the other side of December 25th is that Jesus is still here. 12 days later, this Christ child is still walking among us, or at least he probably will be in about 10 to 18 months, depending on development. Church history actually does some pretty solid work, offering us something beautiful in this idea. The celebration of Jesus' birth is actually far more interesting than it may seem. In the first and second centuries, to oversimplify it, there were these groups of, they were called Gnostics, Gnostic teachers, that were telling people that all matter was bad. Your body's bad, the world doesn't matter, only the spirit of a thing, the soul of a thing matters. And this really frustrated the bodybuilder movement and the environmentalists of the time, but it also kind of riled up followers of Jesus. And it became a significant matter of theology to determine that Jesus was in fact material. He was a human being, flesh and bone. And where the church for the past 200 years before that had had a significant emphasis on the death and resurrection of Jesus, now that we're getting 200 years into church history, 200, 300 AD, it's becoming incredibly important to also celebrate his birth, his fleshiness, his incarnation. This kind of comes to a head right around the Council of Tours in 567, if you'll allow me to nerd out for a moment, but I do think this matters. Council of Tours formally decided on this idea that we call Advent, that there should be a time leading up to Christmas, 25 days, we'll call it, that Advent is a time of preparation. Traditionally, this is also a time of fasting because of the feast that's coming. And then Christmas. How long should we celebrate Christmas for? How long should the party be? 12 days. That's what they decided at the Council of Tours. This is where the idea of the song, The 12 Days of Christmas, comes from. This is where Shakespeare's play, The Twelfth Night, comes from. And if you want to dial that back and be like, what's the spiritual significance of what's going on? Hilarious. It's a comedy, okay? So take it with a grain of salt. Don't recommend it. Why 12 days? Tradition held that it was 12 days after the birth of Jesus that the wise men came for their visit. And that's really a story that centers on the appearing of this star, of this light that came. And for hundreds of years now, the church has been reading the verses that we just read this morning. Traditionally, this is what you read on this particular Sunday. And tonight, a huge group of people will be gathering in the city of Bethlehem to read these same verses. This is a day, and this idea of Christmas tide, these 12 days, is a time that is steeped in tradition. And there are some traditions in the church that were better off saying, that was a good idea back then. We're going to do something different. Sometimes there's traditions like these that maybe we've stepped away from that returning to is deeply meaningful and has something to offer us. Let me read these verses again. I'm going to start a little bit before where we read the first time. And in the way that the four different Gospels, the four accounts of Jesus' life, write the story of his birth, John is for sure the weirdo in this one, because John's like super metaphorical, and he's not talking, you're not going to see a lot of hay and donkeys in this one. You're going to see a lot of light. John 1, starting in verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and that life was the light of all people. And that light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. We'll jump to verse 9. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will of the flesh or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. Not a lot of hay and donkeys. A lot of the idea about this Word and a lot about how this Word is light. John is telling a dramatic story here. This light, it was in the beginning, before there was anything, before the world was made. And that light came into the darkness, into the void, into the chaos, and the light gave it order. It was there at the creation of all things. But it wasn't done there. There was still darkness in the world, and this is a pretty significant point for John and for us. If we're going to get John, and by getting John, get this character of Jesus that he's writing about, one thing that we have to ask ourselves is, when I look around the world, and when I read the news, is there darkness? Does it seem to me that the world is in need of rescue? Like there's a guide that's needed to show us what to do? And what about when I look in the mirror, or when I read my journal? And that's when we get a fun nudge. The light has guided people since the creation of the world. In fact, it's taken an interest in a particular group of people. Verse 11 says, he came to his own people. That is the Jewish people. The story of the Old Testament is the story of this light, this God coming to his people, particular ones that he'd chosen. But one thing that history muffs a little bit, if we don't read it well, is that those were the only people that were God's people, and John continues to tell the story. These Jewish folks, through the whole Old Testament, they've been given the guidebook. Well, now they've been told to wait for the guide, for the rescue that would come, that it wasn't just going to be instructions like some elaborate IKEA cabinet that you just bought where the paper tells you what to do, but that it would actually come in the form of someone who would have the ability to address the root of our problems. They've been told to wait for the guide who would do something deep inside each one of us, something that's broken in the fabric of creation. He was coming to mend. And then he came. The light that was there before the world was made. The light that uttered into the darkness and into the chaos order. Put on flesh and bone and moved in. And for those who this is a familiar story, the punchline may get lost a little bit, like the final twist in a story that you've already heard 100 times. But when he did come, it wasn't just out there. It wasn't some abstract idea. For the Gnostic teachers, for the early centuries AD, this wasn't just a spirit or a soul. He became flesh. If you've never heard this, or if you could hear it afresh, God, the force that brought order to chaos, the thing that created the sun and lightning and tulips and the human eye, he came for a visit. Wonder. It's just sheer wonder, just a response of no way. If you're hearing this for the first time, he's here. And then there's this additional twist, and this one seems to be really central to the entire rest of the book that John's going to be writing. Do you want to stop and look? Do you want to see him? And for those who were his people, they couldn't recognize him. Verse 11, no way. Why not? They've been given like a lot of literature to be told what to wait for. How is it that they couldn't recognize him? And as a central theme, John is not just giving a historical account here. Did you ever read one of those choose-your-own-adventure books as a kid? Do you remember these things? As the reader, you had choices to make after each chapter. Like, do you take the ore cart down on the shaky rails into the cave, or do you cliff dive in the pool with the alligators that were in the water, that have as you have the waterproof alligator repellent you bought from the Persian rug dealer and wondering if it actually is going to work? You remember these stories? John isn't just writing a historical account here saying, hey, he came to his own people and they didn't recognize him. Verse 11 and 12 says this, he came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him, but to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave the power to become children of God. The story's wide open. It's for everyone. This is not just a story about Mary and Joseph. It's not just the Jewish people, but heck, even those crazy astrologist, non-Jewish magi folks are getting in on this story. In fact, anyone can get in on this story. Perhaps the most exciting thing about this opening passage is that we're invited to the story too. It says, to anyone who did accept him in verse 12. That means anyone at all, then and now. You don't have to be born in a particular family or in a particular part of the world. God wants people from everywhere to be born in a new way. Born into a family which began through Jesus and since has spread into the entire world. And a thoughtful person has only one response to this. So who is it that I'm receiving? And it's not just a question for those checking out the claims of Jesus. But if you're somebody who would say, I've actually been following Jesus for a while, I think that question is a good, reasonable question for you to be asking as well. Who is this again? And if these are questions you find yourself asking, some others, like, what does he mean to me as I read about this Jesus character? And what do I need from him, this Jesus character? What's he like? Who is this exactly that I'm receiving? These are the questions of the Christmas spirit. Because if you're paying attention, you're really asking, well, what's God like? Because this Jesus is God. And if you're asking that, you're really asking, what am I doing with my life? Because he's the author of it. And if you're asking all of these, you're someone who's on a spiritual journey with a deep desire to know the source of all goodness and truth and beauty and to align yourself with it. And that's not just a good story. That's the story we're all wanting. That's a story that says, what's the most fun life? Because I want to live it. It simultaneously is the story that says, what's the most meaningful and purposeful life? Because I want to live it. How can I actually be a part of the world's healing rather than the world's breaking? Because that's the life I want. And the gift of Christmas tide, the gift of 12 days, can be simply stated like this. Come and look. For 12 days, come see him. After the lights and the cookies, come look. And keep looking, and look longer. Have you ever held a 12-year-old baby? A 12-day-old baby? 12-year-old baby. I guess I've done that too. 12-day-old baby? Happy Christmastide. Today, you get to. He's still here. Jesus didn't magically vanish on the evening of December 25th. He was here to stay. He was here to grow up and give a life worth paying attention to. He'd go on to heal the sick and the disabled. He'd feed those who were hungry, people who had been convinced they were bad or unlovable or broken. He spent his time sharing about the love of God, and he called them children, and he gave them a home. And the way he forgave, the way he loved, the way he just seemed to absorb hate and return only compassion, even as he hung murdered on a criminal's cross, never has there been a person like this. Come look. Come pay attention to this Jesus. He did not merely come to be born. Our verses today come at the front end of 21 chapters of a lifetime of someone who deserves our attention. And perhaps it's here that there's one additional gift of Christmas that's still being offered to us. And actually, maybe it's the whole point. If we're watching this Jesus, his birth and his life, all 21 chapters, what's this story doing? What's it about? Who is this? I think those 21 chapters in mind that Pastor Howard Thurman wrote his famous poem, The Work of Christmas Begins. He wrote this: when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and the princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among people, to make music in the heart. After the holidays and the celebration and the busyness of the season, when life returns to normal, the life of Jesus, the incarnation, The fleshiness of him continues. The part of him that says, no, the world does matter. The body does matter. Hungry people should be fed. Those who are experiencing injustice in their life, we should set that right. The life of a Jesus who engages the physical world would look at the Gnostics and say, no, celebrating my birth, the incarnation, it matters a whole heck of a lot. The incarnation continues through you and me. So first, in this time of Christmastide, it should not be lost on us that Jesus has come to be born for us. That the places in me that are lost and broken and hungry, that he's come just for me. And I need to hear that because as an Enneagram 3, I want to know what's the application, what am I supposed to do, when do we get to the tasks? And sometimes I just need to hold still for a second and go, it's a gift given to me and I just need to receive it. And maybe the gift of Christmastide, of 12 days after Christmas for you is the same. Was there a moment, or have there been moments, or maybe has there been days where you've gotten to just receive him? To pay attention to what is my need, what are the things I'm yearning for? And to be able to look those things fully in the face and look him in the face and say, can you do something about this? But it doesn't stop there. Howard Thurman, I think, just nails this. I love that poem so much. The work of Christmas, the beginning of this Christmastide, the receiving of this Christ child is not just something for us to hold only to ourselves, but to offer. He says the work of Christmas begins. And as we consider what we've been given, for those who do receive it, we find ourselves compelled to dance to the music that it begins in our heart. The music whose meter and rhyme can't help but move us towards the lost and the broken and the hungry to continue to expectantly wait for Jesus to show up in those places. To be Christ to the world, to one another through who we are, what we say and what we do, to be light, to be love, to somehow in some way find the music in our hearts once again in the day-to-day, to be touched by God so that we can touch the hearts of others and teach them to make music as well. So on this 12th day of Christmas, for one last time until next year, Merry Christmas to you. I hope today can serve as a breath of fresh air. I hope that as we sang Christmas carols this morning, that there was something in you of, are we doing this still? Yeah. We're actually going to do it all the time. Not necessarily singing Christmas carols, but we are going to celebrate a fleshy Jesus, one who says the world matters, one who says your needs matter and I've come for you. And not just for you, but through you, I've got some work that I'm wanting to just blow your mind with. So I think this poem and this season of Christmas time offers two questions. And so for the journalers and the contemplatives, these are for you. Where do you need to experience him for yourself? I'm in need of finding and of rescue, of mending. This year, I need to create time to experience Jesus, to hold still long enough for him to actually get in a word, a healing touch. If this is you, I'd humbly suggest doing this with a mentor if you don't have one, someone to just join you on the journey. And again, for some of us, that's all we need. For some of us, you may need this second one as well, or for some of us, we only need this second one. But the second thought would be this: where am I needing to experience him for myself this year through joining him in the work he's up to in Christmas? If you've been a follower of Jesus but have considered it an individual sport, man, do I have good news. Being with Jesus, new insight, journeying with him. If you're wanting to have a deeper faith and you've been diving into books and podcasts and more information, hoping to experience it there, those are not bad things. But I'd humbly suggest that you would consider not a Gnostic Jesus who says it's all about the ideas and the spirit of the things, but I'd humbly suggest go find a fleshy Jesus. Where might there be people around our community, maybe around your neighborhood or your home or your workplace, that are in need of justice or love Where might Jesus be inviting you to be with him in those places? Where are there hungry or homeless or hurting people? Merry Christmas. On the 12th day of Christmas, I hope that it is a gift to hear songs that you go, this isn't right. These are songs that we only sing one day a year. And go, no, actually, these are songs that we sing all the time because the fleshiness matters. So as we sing, as hopefully most of the gifts are unwrapped, and hopefully as most, if not all, of the travel is done, I hope that today, maybe for some of us who are like, another Christmas came and went, I hope that today is a day to go, it's still Christmas, and you haven't missed anything. So for those who are able, let's stand and sing together.